Good morning and welcome to our Good Health program brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System in the KOHU studio. I'm Caitlin Kozad, the host for Good Health, and today we have Dr. Trey Riggert. He's a board-certified physiatrist, which, if you're wondering, that is pain management, and he's here to talk about all things pain management, but also specifically spinal stenosis. He's with Good Shepherd Orthopedics, which is located at 620 Northwest 11th Street. It's Suite M201 in Good Shepherd's newest building called the Medical Plaza on campus. The orthopedics team includes Drs. Kyle Duncan, he's a podiatrist, Dr. Matthew Thompson, an orthopedic surgeon, and Dr. James Whittam, also an orthopedic surgeon, as well as Dr. Trey Riggert. Dr. Riggert, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Caitlin. Thank you for having me.
And you were just telling me before we went on air about a story. It was a patient that had a special kind of back pain called lumbar spinal stenosis and how you were able to help her. I'd like to dive into that story and learn more about her problem because I understand it's common in our community. So can you share about that story with the audience?
Oh, absolutely. Mary, she was 80 years of age, and she came to us on referral from her primary care, which actually isn't necessary. You can certainly call in and make an appointment. But her doctor astutely observed that she had a special kind of back and bottom and leg pain that was actually pretty easy to treat. And what Mary had noticed is that when she sat down, she felt great. But when she stood up at the counter to cook and clean, she started having back pain that, as she stood, would slowly progress to go down into her bottom and eventually her thighs.
Oh, no.
And what she noticed is when she would walk around the house, or if she tried to go to the store, as she walked, that pain would get progressively worse until she had this very tired feeling in her legs and her bottom and her back. And it really stopped her from walking very far, and it stopped her from standing very long. She found that when she sat, everything kind of miraculously went away in a few moments, and then she could start the whole cycle all over again. Now, a lot of people have had back pain, and they'll recognize that Mary's problem is different from what most of us have when we lift something too heavy and our back aches, right?
Yeah.
This pain that she had, her doctor recognized, was characteristic for something called claudication, which is really a fancy medical term for pain when you walk that's in your legs. So she came to me, and she told me this story, and we looked at her closely. One of the other things that can kind of mimic this is if you have some cloggage in your blood vessels, that can also create a pain when you walk. So we made sure there wasn't anything else obvious. And we did send Mary off for some physical therapy to strengthen her core and an MRI of her spine, her lumbar spine. And she came back, and lo and behold, she did have spinal stenosis, which is this narrowing of the tube in her low back that the nerves go through from the head down to the legs. And oddly, when this gets narrow in the center, it squeezes on those nerves, and it doesn't create like the sciatica that you and I might have heard our friends talk about. It creates this tired, aching feeling that's there when you stand and walk. And it turns out, when you stand up straight, the hole gets smaller, and when you lean forward or sit down, the hole gets bigger, and that's why the symptoms go away. So Mary would say, well, you know, when I go to the store, if I get a shopping cart and I lean forward onto the cart and push the cart around kind of leaning on it, I can go a long ways. But if I stand up and push that cart, I can't go very far. So it's classic for this odd form of back pain, this lumbar spinal stenosis. Now, what we've done for Mary so far is we used a fancy machine in a procedure room to look inside of her back and deliver, using a little acupuncture pin while looking at a TV, some anti-inflammatory to that part of her back where it's narrow. And you can actually shrink the tissues down for a period of time. And that's what we did for her because it's simple. Turns out Mary has had a stroke and she has some other problems that preclude her from having a definitive surgical solution for this narrowing. And we saw her back not too long ago, and she's doing really well. She's able to stand much longer and walk, and her husband says she hasn't stooped forward this far. So she's really quite happy with the simple treatment. And now we're kind of in the waiting phase because sometimes the injection will last for 6 or 8 months. Sometimes it'll last for 3 months. Sometimes it'll last for a year. At the beginning, it's very hard to say. So we'll follow her along and see how long this lasts, and it'll probably turn into her treatment. Ideally, she'll get a couple of these injections a year and be able to get to the store and get out to the mailbox and do those things that she wants to do. So it's really a nice story that, you know, speaks to a doctor in the community recognizing that this wasn't your run-of-the-mill aching back, and that there was a specific and, you know, actually quite useful, simple treatment for Mary. And she's benefited greatly because we have this community benefit available at the hospital. It would have been hard for her to get to Portland or the Tri-Cities because of their family situation. So it's really nice. She can just, you know, sort of come down the street and get this treatment and feel better. So that's Mary's story, and I just thought it was sort of a lovely story, given what we're talking about today. So it was a pleasure to share.
Yes, a great example, and so happy that Mary can get back to the things she needs to do every day. That's what we want. So can you explain then what lumbar spinal stenosis is and how it affects the spine?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's one of those things that it's kind of like gray hair in your spine. It's not that you have a fracture or you have something horrible. It's that we aren't honestly designed all that well. And so down at the bottom of our spine, where it hooks onto our pelvis, we tend to get a lot of gray hair as we age. And really, that's arthritis. And what the arthritis does down there is it creates extra bone and the ligaments get thick. And the hallway, the hole, the tube, the conduit, if you will, that takes the nerves from the brain down through the low back and out into the legs, it gets smaller than it should be because of this extra bone and these thickened ligaments. And it's sometimes there's some extra adipose. Sometimes people get a little overweight, and they'll actually gain a little fat inside that tube. And that makes things narrow where the wires go through the conduit. That's a situation that happens mostly in older people. So our seniors, about 10% of them have this spinal stenosis and some degree of this claudication. What happens is things get narrow in there. Oddly, it's not that it really puts electrical pressure on the wires. It actually collects blood at that area. The venous outflow from the area can't get through where it needs to go. And you get a venous congestion around those nerves that puts even more pressure on them when you stand up. And that creates this back pain. People describe it as an ache, right about at belt line typically. And as they stand longer, it extends down into the gluteal or bottom region and then down into the thighs. And they typically talk about a tired, fatigued feeling when they're standing or walking. Not a burning or tingling, and not the aching of a bad knee or a bad hip. It's a fairly unique description. And then, of course, when they bend forward or sit, it releases this congested blood. Things sort of settle down, and they feel good again when they're sitting. So, you know, I've hurt my back lifting a spare tire and such, and it kind of aches when I sit. These people are fine sitting and watching TV or sitting in a car or sitting on a long plane flight. It's the standing and walking they can't do, and that's what makes it unique. And that's sort of the thing we look for is, you know, do you feel good when you sit? Then we're like, aha.
Makes sense. And who's most at risk for developing lumbar spinal stenosis?
Yeah, we see it in young folks sometimes, you know. I've seen people as young as 30. So, you know, if you're a young 30, 40, 50-year-old person, you can have this. If you have those classic symptoms, you should certainly talk to your physician and have an exam and look for other things, but it could be this. It's typically at that young age in someone who's inherited from their parents a genetically small conduit or a genetically small spinal canal, and then something has happened to set it off at their young age, maybe a small disc herniation or maybe early arthritis. It does happen. But the great bulk of the people we see are seniors, people in their, you know, mid-60s, 70s, 80s, 90s are the folks that really get disabled with this. They may notice it when they're a bit younger, but, you know, they start complaining when they can't get around the store, they can't get to the mailbox, they can't stand in their kitchen and bake or do what they want to do at the workshop. Then typically it comes up in an exam with their primary care doctor and somebody clues into it and then we get to see them.
So Dr. Rigger, you had already touched on some of the common signs and symptoms of lumbar spinal stenosis. What else is there to look out for?
Yeah, so the good news is that this doesn't take away the strength in people's legs. It doesn't, you know, make it so they can't walk. It just sometimes, as it gets worse, makes it so people don't want to walk. So, you know, people get concerned. Am I going to get paralyzed? Is this going to be like the thing? Typically not. It's sort of a disability or an irritation for people, but it's not a catastrophic thing. So that's one thing to say. The other thing it's not is it's not sciatica. The person that has the burner down the leg or the burner down the back of the leg to the foot from the disc herniation has a different problem. Especially, you know, those folks typically will still hurt when they sit or when they lie. This isn't that. This is pain when you stand and walk. And it typically doesn't affect the bowel or bladder nerves. If somebody comes in and they have stenosis and they're having issues in that department, we're thinking other things. So it's really just this fatigue with standing and walking and then the shopping cart sign where people want to lean over the shopping cart or lean over their walker to get around. And oftentimes if it's a guy, the wife has been yelling at them to stand up straight. And I have to tell the wife, you know, he can't stand up straight. That makes things worse for him. He has to bend forward to get around. And sometimes that can, you know, cut down on the marital strife just to say that out loud in the exam room.
So is there, like, a point of no return? Like, when should someone come to see a doctor like you when they're showing these signs and symptoms and or, you know, is there really a point in time that, you know, things can be a lot worse if you wait?
So there generally isn't. And we generally like to see people when it's starting to interfere with what we call their activities of daily living or their avocational activities. Like, you know, I'm a walker. I usually walk 3 miles a day. Now I can't. That's obviously going to severely infect somebody's health. The one caveat is we do see people that, you know, they have lumbar spinal stenosis. It's something that does slowly get worse with time, and we can counsel them about that. And it depends a lot on what their lifestyle is. You know, if they're a walker, then we want to keep that in mind. If they generally like to lead a sedentary life and they're up and about just to do a few things, then we keep that in mind. But the trick is, you know, if you want a surgical solution for this, it's best to have it before you have other medical problems. So we do see a fair number of folks that get to 80, 85, and they have this, and maybe they only have it at one level in their back, so it would have been reasonably easy to fix. But by now they've had a stroke or a small heart attack, or they have kidney disease, and they really aren't healthy enough to have the anesthetic, to have a solution that would be surgical and more definitive. And then we might get into a situation where the anti-inflammatory injections, maybe they only last for a couple months or 6 weeks, and we're in a little bit of a tight spot for them because we can't do the injections more than about every 3 months. So they end up saving them for the big trip to go visit the grandkids, and then they do suffer a bit more than they might if we'd gotten to them earlier. So that's the one caveat. I encourage people to get evaluated when they notice it. It's an odd kind of back pain, so if you really notice this, boy, it bothers me a lot when I stand, bothers me a lot more when I walk, it's really worth talking to your primary care or calling and making an appointment with us for an evaluation.
Yes. And I mean, I think of, like, you know, I have some family members that have, they claim to have very high pain tolerance. And I would just encourage them that, you know, if something seems off and it is affecting your daily activities, that it's probably time, like you say, to talk to your primary care doctor. So let's talk about, you know, how exactly is lumbar spinal stenosis diagnosed?
Oh, that's a good question as well. So obviously, I'm really interested in, you know, when someone comes to visit me, I like to watch them walk in, and sometimes from across the room, you can kind of tell if they're, you know, they have that sort of forward stoop gait, and they're over their walker pushing it in. You're like, I think maybe. And then just the where it hurts and the character of the discomfort, the whole history that we've been discussing, really sets the stage. And then we're kind of looking for things on the physical exam that might mimic spinal stenosis. So we talked a little bit about, you know, cloggage of the blood vessels can create a similar kind of issue. So we're looking for pulses and blood flow to the feet and legs and hair growth and skin. So the physical exam illuminates it, and then, you know, we're poking and prodding to see if there are other issues that might be adding to the suffering, arthritis in the hip or a bursitis or something like that. Once we've sort of interviewed the patient and examined them, we have a, you know, a pretty high probability in our mind that they do or don't have this. The definitive thing then is a CT scan or an MRI of the low back. You know, for our patients that have pacemakers or other implantable devices, some of those aren't MRI compatible, so they get a CT scan. Everyone else gets an MRI, and that really tells the story. Is it one level that's going to be a fairly simple fix, or is it four levels that may be more complicated?
Yeah, so can you go into, you know, what treatments are available for lumbar spinal stenosis?
Sure. You know, again, it's a matter of sort of tailoring the treatment to the person's life condition. You know, one example would be Mary, who was older and had comorbidities, right? She had these other illnesses, so she couldn't have a definitive surgical fix. So for her, you know, we do these epidural injections periodically, probably will. We've done one. And those can either be quite targeted, like a rifle, to the area, the one area perhaps that's narrow, using this fancy x-ray machine we have in this table that has motors. We can take a little acupuncture pin type thing and put it to the area of the narrowing and deliver a thimble full of anti-inflammatory, watching it on the TV screen, and she'll feel quite good in 7 days. And again, if her pain relief lasts, we have a lovely treatment for her. Now, let's say that she's a little healthier and a little more mobile, and maybe she, you know, only gets 3 months out of that shot. We have a cluster of what we call minimally invasive procedures that are a little bit surgical, but are also done with this motorized table and this x-ray machine. One of them is called indirect decompression, where we take a little tube that's somewhat smaller than a pencil, and we guide it down to the narrow spot while we're watching the TV. And through that, we put a little device that allows us to remove just enough tissue to open things up in the hallway. And the patient ends up with a couple, maybe three little incisions about the size of an aspirin that are glued shut with a Band-Aid. And that works really well for the right person and doesn't require a general anesthetic. And has been around now for about 20 years and has been studied quite extensively and, you know, has really good 5 to 10 year persistence in terms of pain relief. Now, change the story one more time. And, you know, we have a healthy, younger, 60-something male, and he's the kind of guy that just wants the bearings on his truck replaced. He doesn't want to repack those bearings. He wants them replaced, and he doesn't want to worry about them for 60,000 miles. He's probably going to do well with the traditional orthopedic neurosurgical solution where they actually make an incision and go in and just remove the bone that's creating the problem directly and put a couple screws in there and fuse that segment. And because he's young, we know that's going to last him, you know, the next 30 years. He's basically just fixed. He's healthy. That's a bigger surgery, but he's the kind of person that can stand up to it, and he can use that construct for a long period of time, whereas the person who's a little less healthy and a little farther along might choose the minimally invasive surgery or perhaps just to be managed with the injections.
And, you know, when you talk about surgery as an option, you know, how long is the recovery period after surgery for lumbar spinal stenosis?
Oh, yeah, another good question. You know, the injections, we just have people stay out of the bathtub for 24 hours, and it takes about a week for anything to happen, and then they feel better. The minimally invasive procedures that we support at Good Shepherd, the one that I discussed through the little tube about the size of a pencil, those folks, they get better over about 6 weeks after the procedure. They have to stay out of the bathtub for 10 to 14 days, but they don't have to wear a brace or a bolster. The people that have the traditional orthopedic solution, they're feeling pretty good in about a month to 6 weeks, and they're out playing golf and lifting what they want to lift after about 4 to 6 months. You have to be a little careful if you have a more frail person that lives alone and has a lot of steps. The big surgery, the orthopedic surgery, can be a problem because they may have trouble getting dressed or getting to the bathroom. And so we have to be careful we don't put someone in a situation where they end up in the care facility for 3 or 4 weeks. That's why a lot of these minimally invasive procedures are kind of a sweet spot, because people can go home and do what they need to do. Same thing with the injections. They can go home right afterwards and do what they need to do.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like to me there are just, you know, many options available to folks that have this kind of pain, and they absolutely should talk to their primary care doctor, give, you know, the orthopedics clinic a call at Good Shepherd. How can listeners learn more about this and get in touch with you?
Yeah, the bottom line is, you know, we welcome people to make direct referrals. So if you hear this on the radio and maybe you're not connected to primary care or maybe you're younger or what have you and you want to be evaluated, we do accept direct referrals from patients themselves. We can reach out and collect records and such. And Caitlin, I'll defer to you for the best way, you know, people to get through to our office. What the web interface is like, but we don't require referral. But obviously, if you're hooked in with your primary care, that's a great way to access us as well. They can send over all the records, and we'll have that. We're happy to take those referrals. We're happy to take direct referrals, and we do that all the time.
Excellent. So we only have a couple more minutes here, and I'd just like folks to get to know you and your background just a little bit. You've been with Good Shepherd many years now, and you're part of the orthopedics team there at the hospital. So tell us about what you like to do in your spare time.
Yeah, you're right, Caitlin. We have been coming out there for, gosh, probably a little over a decade. It's a lovely community. I enjoy the drive. I get to look at the river where I do a lot of my fun stuff. I like to kite. I'm one of those kite surfer people. So, I've spent a fair bit of time out in the Boardman, 3 Mile area kiting. I like to mountain bike. So obviously there's a lot of lovely mountain biking as you head out that direction. I like to ski. There's a website that I follow. It's called The Gorge Is My Gym. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that one. But that's kind of the way that I treat this whole area. It's just a wonderful place for me to do all the things that I really do enjoy doing. Now, in terms of free time, I have to be honest. I'm the founder of a fairly large private practice as well. And we now have, 5 doctors and 5 mid-levels and a social worker and about 60 employees and 4 offices. So that keeps me pretty busy. I do have 4 children, one of them still at home, and we're all still doing things together all the time. And then, believe it or not, I do have 4 cats and 2 dogs. So we do walks and that kind of such. We have gotten rid of the chickens and the rabbits and the goats and such since the kids have gotten out of 4-H. So I no longer wake to the goats dancing on my porch. That used to keep me pretty busy as well. But these days, I'm mostly involved in the practice of medicine and kind of trying to stay fit and doing things with my friends and family.
Yes, and we are so happy to have you at Good Shepherd, and I just want to encourage folks listening today that, talk to your primary care provider or reach out to Good Shepherd Orthopedics. You can schedule an appointment with Dr. Rigger anytime, and we look forward to seeing you. So it's time to wrap up Good Health. I want to thank Dr. Rigger for joining us this morning to share about spinal stenosis and pain management services at Good Shepherd. For more information about Good Shepherd Orthopedics and the services Dr. Rigger provides, you can visit our website at www.gshealth.org, or you can call the clinic at 541-289-7075. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, where we'll post a link to today's program via a podcast. Dr. Rigger, thanks again so much for being here with us today.
Such a pleasure.
Again, this is Good Health, brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System in the KOHU studio. Thank you for joining us, and be well.